Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, I've been thinking a bit philosophically lately. I've been thinking about what does it actually mean to be rich? Now, at first blush, this is one of those sort of questions which, you know, maybe the mere fact that you're asking it gives you your answer. I mean, you don't ask, am I rich or am I sane, unless you actually are, and then you're just sort of pontificating a bit too much about it. But I tell you what got me thinking about it is Guy Ritchie. He has this... He has this good series about, it's called The Gentleman. And it starts out with this sort of montage of what you might assume are very rich people, landed gentry living in their country estates in their big houses. But they're all absolutely broke. And, you know, yes, they live on a country estate with a very big house that's been in the family for 17 generations or whatever it is. But they're completely poor, and you know the roof is shot through, and you know they can't afford to fix it, and nobody goes upstairs anymore because the upstairs is just covered in tarpaulin and buckets everywhere, which they just had to go up and occasionally empty out the window. So you know it is possible to, on first blush, look rich while being completely poor. Spoiler alert, where I'm coming to this is basically Western nations today. Because I keep getting told that people are coming here because we are a rich country, but it doesn't feel like that to me. It feels to me like we are completely broke. But anyway, now on my philosophical journey, I started pondering, you know, what does it mean to be rich as an individual for a start? And I came to about five factors, I think, that clinched it for me. And, you know, the first big one is that you get to control your time. You know, if your hours are directed by debt and obligation and fear of loss, then maybe you're not actually rich. You know, is the man who earns 40K a year with no mortgage, who has time to raise his children, and control over his calendar and can do what he wants when he wants, is he richer than a banker on 300K who is chained to a BlackBerry and a mortgage on a £2 million McMansion? You know, I think maybe the rich man is the guy who does not necessarily have a lot, but who needs little. And that sort of knocks on the head any notion that being rich is a number. I don't think it is a number. I think it's something else. The second thing I came to is it's about redundancy. You know, it's resilience. It's not living paycheck to paycheck, even if the paycheck is a really big number. It's redundancy in money, but also in energy. You're not burnt out. You're not in relationships that, you know, you hate. You're in relationships that you appreciate. You know, you're not lonely. You have future options. You're not trapped. Third thing I thought is, well, it's life free from arbitrary coercions. You know, if the threat of government and HR departments and bank managers and blackmailers can collapse your life, maybe you're not rich, you're fragile. So wealth has to be sovereignty. Four, the ability to raise the next generation. You know, if you can't afford to raise children without relying on subsidies or extended family, then maybe you're not rich, you're just leasing a lifestyle. And, you know, historically, wealth always meant land and food and family and safety. Whereas today, the sort of generally accepted definition appears to be synthetic and leveraged. And that doesn't feel right. And fifth is the ability to absorb shocks. So, you know, you get sick or you lose your job or the government has some insane notion, like we're going to do 2 years of lockdowns unless you agree to take the thing. Can you ride that out or can you not? So richness is anti-fragility. So then I thought, okay, well, we need a test here, don't we? We need a test to ask if you're rich and, you know, play along at home and see how you feel about these questions. It's, you know, can you stop working for a year and be fine? Can you have another child and not go into debt? Can you tell, you know, HR departments, algorithms, employers, associates, can you tell them to get lost? and survive. Do you have the ability to walk away from, you know, deals and social contagions and people and not be anxious? Can you live where you want and how you want and still sleep well at night? And if you're mostly answering yes to those questions, then I think you're rich, even if you live simply, even if your number isn't as big as somebody else's number who can't answer yes to all of those questions. And, you know, we got this kind of inversion in the modern world where, you know, the average person in the US or UK or, you know, pick your country. I think this applies to the entire Anglosphere and most European Western nations. And, well, you know what I'm talking about. But, you know, the average person, they've got a smartphone and they've got a pension fund and they've got access to Amazon. And they might even buy a lot of stuff on Amazon. But they can't afford a home and they can't afford children and they can't afford to speak freely at work. You know, they're asset-linked, credit-fed, but existentially rather poor. So anyway, so then I started thinking about, okay, well, what does this mean for a nation? Because, you know, I think that a nation is healthy and rich when a single income family can raise children in safety. I think it's when their citizens are not surveilled or coerced or economically trapped or having to ask permission from their bloody bank to withdraw some money. And if they don't give a good enough reason, then they get told no and they can make transactions. I think a nation is rich when it produces more than it consumes and it doesn't have to rely on leverage in order to get there. And I think it is rich when it treats the future as something to invest in and not something that you just extract from to keep your old people in the lifestyle that they have come to expect from the largesse of the state. And by all those metrics, Britain was richer in the 1990s, not because we had a bigger number. You know, the national balance sheet was much smaller then, because people had more control over their lives and they lived more fulfilling lives. And it feels today that we are rich in the number, but we're actually quite poor in everything else. We're certainly poor in sovereignty. So right then I thought, okay, well, let's try and quantify this. Let's quantify what does it mean for a nation to be rich. So number one, it can sustain itself without extraction. You know, if a nation produces enough food and energy and capital and training in its people without bleeding future generations through debt obligations or relying on foreign bailouts, you know, if it doesn't live on debt debasement and imported labour just to function, well, Britain today runs persistent twin deficits, you know, fiscal and current account, which in itself is a massive red flag in corporate finance. You know, compare that to post-war Britain. Poor on paper, but we built our own homes, we mined our own coal and we educated our own engineers and we raised the next generation. And even by the 1990s, which is kind of where the point that I want to focus on as a distinction from today, because actually the 1990s is not that long ago, and I can remember it personally, and I can remember it was fine, it was nice, it was, I mean, compared to today, it's a bloody golden age compared to today. You know, in the 1990s, balance of trade was mildly negative, but basically on everything else that I talked about, it was good. Today, the UK imports, well, basically everything. Energy, food, labour, capital. What does it export? Debt and some services. Right, the second factor in is a nation rich is can it raise the next generation? And keep them safe. That's important, keep them safe. Britain's fertility rate is 1.5, and that's only when you include the new arrivals who are a little bit better on that front. Child poverty, housing instability, mental illness, family, okay, they're all up, and then family formation is down. Well, that doesn't look good. If you look at educational standards on these metrics where they compare nations. Britain peaked in about 2006 and has been declining ever since. And you only need to look a little bit at some alternatives. You know, take Israel, for example. Israel is less wealthy per capita, right? But it's got a fertility rate of 3. It's got a strong national identity, which admittedly is causing a bit of an issue at the moment, but we won't go into that here. I'll let Faraz do that on his show. But all round, it looks like a civilization which is confident and assertive, and it's in growth mode. That's not what it looks like here. I mean, even compare us to France. Economic basket case, to be sure. But they've got a fertility rate of 1.8, which is about as high as it gets in Europe. They do channel some subsidies, some state subsidies. Of course, they do their France into that. But, you know, they have a much better rate than we do here. Third factor. You've got to protect your nation from chaos. Safety is pretty foundational. A rich nation maintains law and order. Borders. It prevents urban collapse, which urban areas tend to do if not managed correctly. And in London, major crime is up, assaults are up, all sorts of altercations are up. Antisocial behaviour is not only up, it's actively tolerated. And border control is barely functional. Well, don't even know if I can use the word barely anymore. You know, 1.2 million arrivals in 2003. And it's come down a bit, but not much. The net numbers have come down because so many Brits are giving up and leaving the country. But that's a cheat. We can't allow them that. Compare that to 1990s Britain. In some things, crime had peaked at that point. Murders were higher than they are now. We get more antisocial behaviour and assaults and all the rest of it. But importantly, in the 1990s, is community cohesion was considerably higher. And trust in institutions, well, it existed. People still had it. Think about, I don't know, a couple of comparisons like Singapore and Sweden. Singapore is very low crime. It has a small state, but very high functioning services. It's got a state which is rich in capacity, even though it's small in size. You compare that to something like Sweden, which is trying to do everything through the state, high nominal wealth, but it just keeps importing dysfunction. And it has no go zones and grenade attacks and gang warfare and considerable demographic anxiety. Well, the fourth thing I thought of is, okay, well, what if the citizens in your country have autonomy and they have time? You know, I would think that a rich country enables its people to live and not just survive. And in Britain today, dual income is basically a requirement to raise children, which of course means that somebody else ends up raising your children for you. Commute times are up. Working hours have flatlined. Mental health has declined, most significantly in young people. Anxiety and depression are well up in young people. Only 39% of 25 to 34-year-olds own their own home. The rest rent from boomers or the state. And by own your own home, I don't mean that you actually own your own home. What I mean is that you nominally own it while you lease it from the bank and make mortgage payments. Compare that to the mid-90s. You know, a single income could support a family back then. You know, we're always given the example of this Homer Simpson's character, who we're told is a loser, but young people look at him today and say, well, look, he was raising a family on a single income. And he's got a detached home and he has holidays. I can't accept that this guy's a loser by any means. but it's just because it's from the 90s. More people owned homes by 30 in the 90s, and there was less surveillance, there was less debt, and there was more trust. You know, again, you know, pull out some comparisons. I don't know, Japan have, they have long work hours, they have low immigration, they have high savings, so they're rich in capital, but they're rather poor in time because they really like to work. Italy, on many metrics, wealthy families, but they've got a declining young population. They've got deep stagnation, and it looks like a country which is rich in heritage, but broke in future prospects. Right, fifth thing, what is a rich nation? Well, it can defend itself and it can make its own decisions. A rich nation is not a vassal. It has military, industrial, and cultural sovereignty. The UK's armed forces are at a post-war historic low. Its energy independence is gone. It cannot make independent decisions and chart its own course when it is dependent on France to keep the lights on. Our cultural policies outsourced to NGOs rather than being something that we collectively agree on. Monetary sovereignty is at most nominal because the Bank of England is constantly playing catch up to world markets and basically the dollar. Let's throw in another couple of comparisons. Hungary. It's small, economically weaker, but very rich in sovereignty. Controls its own borders and it defines its own culture. United Arab Emirates. It's resource driven, but heavily investing in diversification and city building and national prestige. And you get a sense of that national prestige. They feel it out there. They feel like they're building towards something. So then we start thinking, okay, well, is Britain rich? And can we ask, is it richer than it was in the 1990s? Well, if you go for a standard economist, they're going to go with yes, because the number is bigger. But then you ask me, who's not a standard economist, and I think, okay, right. Productivity growth. 1990s, it was 2% a year. Today it's 0.4, and I find that number questionable. So are we richer? No. Young home ownership, it was 60%. Now it's 39%. Are we richer? No. No, we're not. Single income families. Perfectly feasible in the 1990s. Today, very rare. Are we richer? No. Energy autonomy. Right. So back then, thriving North Sea oil exports. Today, we are a net importer. So are we richer? No. Crime and public order. It was recovering in the 1990s. It was improving. Today, it's fraying, and people have actively lost faith in the police, who are largely seen as enemies. So are we richer? No, we're not. Border control. In the mid-90s, it was basically intact. Today, there is no semblance of border control. So are we richer? Again, no. NHS, not a fan of the model myself, but 1990s, short waits. You know, if you did need to use it, it was available and relatively quickly. Today, there was a 7.4 million backlog, I believe. So, are we richer on the metric of the NHS? No. Mental health. There are international measures for looking at these things. I think they call them CMD. I'll look this up. So in the mid-90s, it was 15% on this metric. Today it's 23%. So You know, are we richer in mental health? No, again. Fertility, it was 1.8 back in the mid-90s, which is still too low. But what we would give for 1.8 today? So are we richer? Again, no. Sovereignty. We had it. National sovereignty. Okay, you know, we didn't have complete national sovereignty. You know, the dollar was still dominant and international bodies were, you know, still powerful. But we could chart our own course back then. And today it is deeply constrained. We can't make a move without it being agreed at some international level. So are we richer on national sovereignty? Is again no. So look, I've just whizzed you through whatever that was. You know, maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 metrics. And on every single one of them, we are poorer than we were in the 1990s. So then I started to get a bit philosophical, right? So a nation is rich when it can sustain its people, its future, and choose its own destiny. And today, Britain is not rich on any part of that metric. We're wealthy in valuation. If you get the auditors out to value our assets, we look rich. But we're poor in national vitality. We're prosperous in metrics, but we're actually collapsing in function. And we are free on paper. You know, you saw Keir Starmer stand up with Donald Trump, and Keir Starmer insisted that, you know, we've long had a tradition of free speech, and Trump is just like, yeah, but you don't have any more, do you? It's ridiculous. We're not free in actuality. So, you know, we got this situation where globally the richest nations may be those rising from poverty with intent. You know, it might be countries like, on these sort of metrics, you know, India, Poland, Indonesia. They're not yet rich in assets, but they are rich in energy and purpose and demographic optimism and a sense of going somewhere. We don't have any of that. So then I thought, okay, right, I'll get some metrics and I'll put some metrics against this stuff. So GDP per capita on a purchasing parity basis, I did all of these on purchasing parity basis, 48,000 a year, right? National debt, 101% of GDP. Fertility, 1.5. Energy balance, we're a net importer. Migration, over 1 million a year. Productivity growth, 0-something%. Public order, collapsing. NHS backlog, high. Young home ownership, low and falling. And cultural confidence is just gone. It's just gone. So we're wealthy in name. We're called a rich country. But on every metric that I look at, we're not rich at all.
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.